Hello, today I'd like to introduce the crystallography with a free electron laser to you, and to help you navigate through the presentation, I will always start a new slide with the title on the slide. So whenever you hear that, you should advance the presentation manually. I'm Mark Messerschmidt, and I'm working for the BioXworld Science and Technology Center, and I've been recently, for the last years, a beamline scientist at the LCLS and worked at many instruments, and I will give only the basics today that in some sense are related to crystallography and leave out all things that have nothing to do with crystallography. Outline. So I will first introduce the LCLS, make a few remarks about the spectrum because that is pretty important for crystallography experiments, then introduce the three LCLS instruments that are currently used for crystallography. We'll move on to the CSPET detector and then show some first results together with the sample injectors that are used for serial femtosecond crystallography, and I'll finish up with what the future hopefully holds at FELs for crystallography. The near-coherent light source. So the LCLS is a pretty big machine, but even bigger is the full accelerator at SLAC at covers a whole 2 miles, and it's comparable with how far San Francisco stretches over the peninsula for everybody who knows the beautiful Bay Area. LCLS performance. So to achieve all the things that are possible with LCLS, there's a very long undulator. It contains 32 undulator modules that are each comparable with the size of an undulator as you find it at a synchrotron. It all together adds up to over 130 meters of length with tuning the electron beam because the undulators are actually fixed at LCLS. This gives access to 300 eV to 10.5 kV radiation. The third harmonic is available up to 25 kV due to offset mirrors that protect from higher harmonics due to radiation physics requirements. And everything that I talk about becomes possible because there's up to 10 to the 13 photons per pulse with varying bandwidths, as one will see on the next slide. Pulse durations can also vary from just a few femtoseconds up to almost a picosecond, even though the very long pulses are only available at the very soft X-rays, and the whole machine runs at 120 Hz, a rather low repetition rate in comparison to any synchrotron that runs at megahertz. LCLS initial performance. So the LCLS started up really quickly. Everybody had expected sort of a struggle, but essentially as soon as it turned on, this beautiful image on the left was observed on a YAG screen that was 80 meters behind the undulator, and it was clear that it was lasing. So in comparison to any synchrotron radiation, one would sort of expect much more than what the screen can capture, completely flooded with a big divergent beam, but it laced right off the bat and produced up to spec performance from the first day. Hard X-ray spectrum at the LCLS. So the one thing that makes working at a free electron laser more difficult than at a synchrotron is the spectrum. Everything about the radiation is born from noise. It's a self-amplified laser that comes from stimulated emission at the startup, and the result of it is that there's many, many little electron bunches compressed that all sort of do a little bit of their own thing and produce a bandwidth and independent lasing parts that result all together in a bandwidth as is shown here. On the left you see the narrow bandwidth version that corresponds to something like 0.3% to 0.5% bandwidth, and it looks actually fairly similar over a very large range of X-ray energies. And on the right, you see what you can achieve with sort of the unusual overcompressed mode of operation, where you can achieve up to a few percent of bandwidth with the LCLS. The AMO instrument. So let's go to the instruments at LCLS that allow crystallography. The first one was certainly not built for doing crystallography. It was more for atomic, molecular, and optical science. Makes use of ultra-intense X-ray pulses that LCLS produces. Has all kinds of spectrometers to do that. But thanks to the Max Planck Institute, an array detector became available, and together with that, an instrument named CHEMP was built, and that allowed to inject nanocrystals into the LCLS beam right with the first experiment becoming available into crystallography. Femtosecond protein nanocrystallography using soft X-rays. So the first experiments were done with photosystem 1 crystals provided by the group of Petra Fromme at Arizona. And as soon as it was tried, it was clear that crystallography is doable at a free electron laser. It produced right away a Nature publication with an astonishing number of crystals used for sort of an initial experiment where one just tries it first. So 15,000 crystals contributed to the structure. Much, much more of them were injected and sort of not used during the experiment. The dose for these measurements hit more than 700 megagray. So it was quite a demonstration that diffraction beyond the damage limit with an FEL was possible. The only drawback is that it was done at a soft energy station, so the resolution achievable wasn't quite in the range where it's desirable for crystallography for biomolecular systems that aim at near atomic resolution. XPP instruments. So to move on, with a year passing, the first hard X-ray experiment became available. XPP stands for X-ray pump probe, so it's intended to do structural dynamics and X-ray interactions with matter mainly. Is very broad in its techniques that can be applied, and one of them is just X-ray diffraction because it's a very versatile experiment. XPP instrument, slide 2. So this is showing the main components important for crystallography. There's a big base in the XPP instruments where one can mount almost any chamber, any setup to do its experiments, and one such setup is a neat little tabletop device that just fits on there and allows to mount crystals in a similar fashion. A chamber can be mounted that injects crystals, as we will see on the following slides for the other instrument. Really everything is possible. On the right side of the slide is the detector arm of XPP. It's a big robot with an arm that allows to place the detector essentially on a sphere around the experiment, allowing a lot of flexibility for crystallography. That's not quite necessary normally, but in principle, one could utilize it there too. It's also possible to just mount a detector in a straightforward fashion right behind the experiment, as it's commonly found in synchrotron stations. Coherent X-ray imaging instrument. The last instrument that I'll introduce, it's again not built for crystallography, as the name imaging suggests. So the idea of the instrument is to allow the diffraction measurement for single particles and solve a structure without ever needing a crystal. To accomplish such a thing, one fortunately enough built an instrument that is also perfectly capable for crystallography, and in fact the CXI instrument does right now much more crystallography than imaging, and does it very successfully. The CXI layout, so the main components for CXI are focusing optics and slits. There are two options to focus the beam in two different locations, with KB pairs reaching about 1 micron focus or 100 nanometer focus to get to higher flux density. And there's a possibility actually to refocus that beam as well, so one can use it twice, as we will see on the very last slides of this presentation. Cornell's like pixel area detector, so to measure a diffraction pattern, one of course needs a detector. Because of the characteristics of LCLS, it was actually necessary to build a custom detector with rather big pixels in comparison to other synchrotron beam lines, but the speed of the detector is actually what counts, because every diffraction pattern needs to be collected after just a single shot of LCLS, so it's desirable to follow the repetition rate of the machine, that is 120 Hz. High-resolution structure of lysozyme obtained using serial crystallography. The very first crystallography demonstration at this hard X-ray instrument was done with lysozyme, and because of the higher energy, the dose was actually greatly reduced over what was demonstrated at soft X-rays, but a very nice focus was utilized, and therefore very small crystals could be measured, and because the measurement was performed at the high energy and pretty much the highest that was available at that time at LCLS was 9 kV, a very decent resolution could be obtained, demonstrating that atomic resolution crystallography is possible at an FEL. Lysozyme Bragg peaks are observed to the edge of the detector, so the resolution actually reached was 1.86 angstrom, and it just demonstrated everything that people have dreamed of at an FEL. Liquid jet development at ASU. To make these experiments possible, one needs an injector. I will introduce three of them. The first one was developed at Arizona, yet again, just like the very first nanocrystals measured at LCLS. It uses gas to focus basically a water jet, and that allows that crystals bigger than the jet can actually be injected. And currently, jet diameters of about 4 micrometers are achievable with using a capillary of about 50 micrometers inner diameter, so the crystals can easily go through the capillary without producing too much trouble, and then be shot by the X-rays, doesn't just destroy the crystals but also blows the whole jet away. An alternative of much slower flowing jet and therefore much less sample consumption is a liquid cubic phase injector developed in Arizona, again by Uwe Weierstahl, and it really drops dramatically the requirement for sample volume available, but it only works with very viscous solutions like the lipidic cubic phase. The third one, also having low flow rates, is the electrokinetic injection, and it's now also available to mount on the very same device as the other two injectors, and therefore can even be used for screening at CXI, and it has similarly low flow rates, and makes use of an electrostatic forces to focus the jet down to then interact with the micron size beam. It does require some kind of cryoprotectant because the solution would otherwise freeze, and unfortunately the frozen solution diffracts quite strongly and therefore cannot be used for the crystallography experiments. Let's go to some results. There's a structure determination of cathepsin B by molecular replacement. One of the first things at LCLS that actually showed something new, and there was crystals that were grown in cells and then isolated as grown in cells. They actually grow out the cells and destroy them in the process of crystallizing. And LCLS was good enough to actually show some new features on this protein, and that was pretty exciting as some first result. A PCS program, so to utilize LCLS fully, it was soon realized that it's very hard to get to beam time for groups, and very difficult to make the first step. And since a little more than a year, it's actually possible to apply for just 6-hour shifts in what LCLS is calling crystal screening. And basically everything about the setup is fully supported by people arranged by LCLS. It does currently require the support of the group of Ilmer Schlichting, or did so far. And it has been demonstrated that one can actually collect full data sets in this just 6 hours, and it's a little faster turnaround than normal LCLS experiments. Recent publications, so there's a few more things that have been going on at LCLS that go in the direction of structural biology. The first things have been demonstrated about structure solution from aligned gas phase molecules, basically going in the direction of being able in the future to solve structures from not crystals, but isolated molecules hit by an injector. This done right now, still on soft X-rays, so it's not quite there, but it paves the way. It has been shown in the second entry that it's possible to solve structures without molecular replacement at LCLS, in this case with a gadolinium derivative of lysozyme. Already mentioned, the lipidic cubic phase injector reduces volume consumption dramatically, and so opens up the field to membrane proteins mainly, but whatever you can stick in something like the LCP could benefit from this greatly. There are a few more methodical papers out there to minimize the amount of data needed. This Nature Method paper, and it's also been shown that there are some promising first results on two-dimensional protein crystals that opens it up even wider for structural biology future perspectives. So of course ulcerless is still a fairly new source, but there's desire to look forward and improve things. One clear thing that should benefit a lot of people is very quick turnaround, because it just opens up the beam time to more people. Currently, that is available with what LCS calls protein crystal screening, what hopefully will be developed into just automatic measurements, basically. Big and better detectors certainly would help the whole story. Beam can be shared, opening up more beam time for people. Sample handling can be done more flexible to allow small volumes mainly to be efficiently used. Analysis still needs a lot of work. It's all but sort of straightforward to analyze the data coming out of an FEL experiment, but everything is moving in the right direction, and its processing chains have been developed, and it doesn't need quite as expert users anymore to do these experiments and analyze the data as it was the case just a few years ago. And there are certainly new sources around. Sakla in Japan provides now the second opportunity of an FEL with very similar qualities as LCLS did. And higher repetition rates are also basically around the corner with what the European XFIL will offer. Creating more beam time at LCLS is, of course, also a very desirable thing. The easiest way to do so right now is imagined with just refocusing the beam, duplicating the experiment I just introduced, and having beryllium lenses in the middle. European XFEL will go a lot further, offering more undulators, three in the initial state, and initially just the same amount of beam lines, coincidental, so six initial beam lines there as well, but you see the gray boxes are there. There's capability to offer even more beam lines. CO femtosecond crystallography should be doable, actually as a parasitic experiment behind the single particle. And biomolecules imaging experiments, so that should offer just additional beam time and therefore make it much more available. European XFIL, slide number two, the rep rate of the European XFIL is much higher. It starts at 5 megahertz in bunches that come at 10 hertz as it's currently envisioned. One can use up to 300 pulses at 10 hertz for CO femtosecond crystallography, giving you 1.5 orders more data potentially than is currently possible with LCLS, for example. To make full use of it, one needs fast triggers and very fast sample delivery, because it's not the 3,000 pulses that counts, but the 5 megahertz rep rate instead of the 120 megahertz. So that's a little bit of a challenge that is currently hard worked on and hopefully will be solved before the beam becomes available. There will be a large energy range available. It could be all the way down to 3 kV, but it's probably not so interesting for structural biology, but most certainly the upper end is much further than at LCLS, and therefore more edges become available if one thinks of phasing. For example, higher resolution becomes much easier with higher energy, and it's a dedicated experiment, so things should become a lot easier. And as already mentioned, it uses the refocused beam, so hopefully that will result in much, much more beam time from all aspects possible. And with that, I'd like to thank you for your attention, and many, many contributors to the science in terms of money and in terms of scientific input, instrument input, detector development, sample development, injector development, and I chose to just name the institutions instead of naming 80 people and forgetting another 80. So with that, I'm done, and thank you for your attention.